We're taking a look at Vinyon Week 5, and we're broadcasting from Sunset Station, a casino in East Las Vegas, Henderson, according to where you want to say. We'll just call it Las Vegas, okay, Kathy Scott?
All right.
How long have you been in Las Vegas?
I've been in Las Vegas for 11 years.
Long time. You're a regular native now.
Well, I'm a native of San Diego. I always tell people I'm from San Diego, but I live in Las Vegas.
Well, San Diego's nice, too.
Yeah, San Diego's a great town.
Yeah, I understand. Do you have a twin?
I do. I have a twin sister, identical. Scary, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Is she in journalism, too?
No, she's not. She's owns an antique store in San Diego. She and her husband run it in Ocean Beach, and she's an antique dealer.
By now, most folks know about Kathy Scott. She has the book Death in the Desert, the Ted Vinyon Homicide. And you're doing a rewrite or a new version, I take it.
Yeah, I'm doing a second edition with an in-depth addendum, but I also am updating and revising the book, so should be out in about 2 months after the trial is over.
Well, Rick Tavish is already on the stand. It took a full day for the defense, huh? Pretty much.
For him, he was on the stand. Well, he started about 12:30 or so on Friday afternoon, went till 5:30. So he's on the stand about 5 hours, and then there'll be more direct testimony on Monday, and then the prosecutors will have at him.
Well, we're going to go down to watch it with you on Monday, and probably get to about the time the cross-examination starts. Basically, how do you think he's doing so far? It's not very common for the person being charged to testify these days.
Well,
lots of debates about that among attorneys.
He looked directly. It was interesting because his attorney, Tony Serra, asked him, did you have anything to do with Ted Vinyon's death? And he looked directly, and his attorney said, look at the jurors and tell them. And he told them unequivocally, no, I did not kill Ted Vinyon. But then he, and the different questions and stuff, he tended to ramble a little. I mean, it wasn't rambling, but to them it might have been. But I think it's been a very long time in the making.
Yeah, well,
I
think
he's wanted to talk for the first time.
I don't know, is it Glenn Hutt, I think, or
Hewitt.
Okay, I'm close to the name. For the Las Vegas Review Journal called it rambling, I think.
Yeah, it was called rambling, but it was very conversational, whether you think he rambled or not. But he was trying to explain things. I think in some cases he may have spoken too much, because if you say certain things, that gives, you know, if you omit certain things, the prosecution may not cross on anything that wasn't discussed.
Yeah, they.
So he's opening up the barn door in this case.
Yeah, the defense tells you don't volunteer things,
mm-hmm.
But he did. Huh?
Yeah, he did. But his attorney let him go. He also let him go longer, I think, on Friday, because he didn't want the prosecution to start, and then have them go home for the weekend thinking about the prosecution's questions. He wanted them to think about the defense. So it's going to be interesting.
It's always interesting to watch these trials and how they jockey for position when they come up to the break at the end of the day. And the prosecution, I know a couple of times, had dynamite-type statements just before the end of the day, early on,
mm-hmm.
and it was just pretty calm.
Mm-hmm.
What about last week? We'll get more into Rick Tavish's testimony in a moment. It was really kind of expert time, I guess, for the defense.
Mm-hmm.
And how do you feel they did? Did they shoot down the theory of homicide pretty well?
I think so. I mean, I don't think the prosecution proved in their witnesses that their theories, which they have two theories. You know, one, he was suffocated, and two, he was forced to take drugs. And I think those two both were shot down by the expert witnesses. Not all the experts agree. But there's too much out there.
Neither,
there's too much question.
The prosecution's two coroners agreed. Both of those pathologists had different ideas. Sims seemed to think it was a drug overdose. Batten came up with this far out theory from Ireland.
Right. Dr. Michael Batten. Well, Dr. Sims was the coroner, and the vantage point that Dr. Sims has is that he was at the scene and he saw the body, and then he also autopsied the body. these other people did not. But I think so that, and that's been pointed out numerous times. But I think that the biggest problem for the prosecution is the fact that they brought a dermatologist in and shot down some things.
Now, they get a chance to come back with a, what they call a sir rebuttal when this is over. But I guess for another day or maybe 2 days, we'll still have some testimony at Tavish. Do they have any other witnesses scheduled at him, or do we know? Usually they have the defendant as the last person.
Yeah, that's what I had thought, too, that they were going to have him as the last. The interesting person who was on their list was Tom Dillard on the defense's list. And they have not brought him to the, they have not brought Tom Dillard to the stand. And I think, and I don't know why, because he did not do well during a pretrial hearing, got all ticked off and stormed off down the hallway and threw a piece of paper down when he was subpoenaed. I think they could tear him to shreds. I don't think he would be a sympathetic witness at all, but who knows what, I mean, they know what they're doing, and for whatever reason, they're not doing it.
They, at least the scuttlebutt around the courtroom is that he's going to wrap up in the next day or two, or are they just assuming that because Rick Tavish is on the stand already?
That's what everybody's assuming, but they're not saying. So who knows? I mean, usually I think that witness is the last one, right?
Usually.
The defendant, but it doesn't have to be, right?
No, it doesn't. There's no written rule on how to do that, and Tony Serra is out of a different cloth. Let us say.
Yes, cut from a different cloth. Yeah, he is a nonconformist. So it's going to be interesting. I know that his co-counsel, Sherry Greenberger and Anna Ling were very pleased with Rick's testimony. So they were very pleased. Tony could have stopped him. He didn't. He let him explain himself, and he looked right at the jurors. So it's going to be interesting to see the jurors' faces on Monday morning, see how they're responding to Rick,
now,
especially on the cross.
Of course, that's the tough time for him. I imagine make it or break it.
I think he'll hold his own. I don't think he'll have any problem.
Now, how about Sandy Murphy? She doesn't have to testify. As far as I know, she's not going to.
No, there's no plan to. I think that, you know, as a woman, I mean, I cry easily for some stupid reason. It's just really easy.
I
don't know why.
You were tough, isn't it? No,
I'm tough, but yeah. I cry easily, and I don't know why. If I get frustrated, I cry. And Sandy cried on the stand when she, during the conviction, you know, sentencing phase of the first trial, and she cried. And I don't think she could hold up. I think that she would probably naturally, I mean, she's cried a lot through some of the testimony, and that is not a sympathetic witness. If you know, blubber, they don't like it. And I think Rick will hold his own. I really do. He's cool as a cucumber. I don't think he's faking it. I think he's being honest. But I think Sandy would fall apart on the stand.
Well, the way I look at it, really, they're going to have their cake and eat it, too, as far as the defense is concerned. In other words, they don't have to put Sandy Murphy on the Tavish Kendall story.
And that's what he's done.
They're kind of tied there by the prosecution, tried to tie them together.
And they
have to live or die by that strategy, and it could backfire now.
Right. Well, he's filled in a lot of the blanks. I think some of the most interesting testimony came out when he described the day they found out that Ted was dead and why he went to pick up Sandy and why Rick showed up and what his thinking was, why he bought her ice cream, you know, next day. And it was like he said, well, I was at a loss as to what to do, and she and Ted really liked this certain kind of ice cream. I was trying to comfort her. He said, can I buy you ice cream?
I took it that originally, and the prosecution tried to make that, hey, let's go down and have an ice cream.
Like it doesn't mean anything.
Like it's a celebration.
Right.
Like it's the same thing as, you know, having a glass of champagne.
When I had I had rabies shots when I was 5 years old, and my dad took my, after the series of rabies, gopher jumped
That's
out of a hole
painful,
and bit
isn't
me.
It?
Yeah, and after the 13 or 14 days of shots, whatever it was, my father took my twin sister and me to go buy a dress, you know. I mean, that was so you do after certain traumas, you know, you go and you do something to try to make the people feel better. And that was his explanation, which I thought was plausible.
Anything stand out in the week's testimony at all besides the experts and Rick Tavish? There were some other, I hate to call them incidental witnesses or tier two witnesses. But
one interesting thing is the Binion family came in force on Friday and planted themselves in the front row. And the Tavishes didn't think their son was going to be on the stand on Friday.
Yeah, we talked about that.
Yeah.
I think they went back home.
They went back home. They watched it on Court TV online. But they'll be there Monday morning. They're going to plant themselves, apparently, in the front row. And it was interesting because the court public information officer kicked a couple of them out of the front row and said, listen, this is not your courtroom. And they put Bonnie Binion and her boyfriend or husband, whatever he is, in the third row. And said the part of this is reserved for the Tavishes, and then they weren't there, of course, but they will be on Monday. And they're going to sit right behind their son. They usually sit off to the side, on the side, way back, and they're not going to. That's what I understand. Well, they need
the
to show.
The sister was there, and Jack Binion was there.
Becky, I don't think Becky Binion was there.
Certainly.
She sure is quiet, holding a low profile. Holding a low profile. But Jack Binion was there. Very interesting. Jack was taking notes, which I'm like, why is Jack taking notes? But anyway, he's aged a lot, but he's taking notes. Bonnie Binion was very, she actually was paying a lot of attention to Rick when Rick was talking about the reason he was taking the Egypt,
silver.
The silver,
mm-hmm.
Because he said they were looting the house. And Rick had said, and Ted had told him, you know, I don't want my ex-wife to get a dime of anything. And he was trying to protect the money, was taking it down to the ranch for Bonnie, you know. And Bonnie was very, I mean, it looked as if she believed him.
Which
but
would be
there's a lot of rolling,
contrary to what you've been told.
Right, a lot of rolling of eyes, a lot of sort of chuckles and snickers, a lot of, and the Binion family kind of got admonished early last week by Judge Bonaventure, about mid last week by Judge Bonaventure for laughing. I think it was a power thing. I think Becky Binion and then Jack Binion jumped in too, but I think they did not want her, an outsider, and they never liked her and she was young, to get a dime of the Binion money.
And
the house was worth a million.
Simple, right.
The house was worth almost a million. They undersold it. The contents of the house were, who knows, paintings and valuables were removed. That, you know, those are scattered all over the Las Vegas Valley. And Sandy didn't get any of that stuff. And then $300,000 cash, which I would think if they're keeping that aside, all of this gains interest over a period of time if she's acquitted.
Yeah, in fact, still she spent 4 years in jail.
Yeah, she spent 4 years in prison. She's out on bail. And Rick has been in, you know, from the time they were arrested, it's almost 5 years. Around 5 years was jail and prison time.
It still seems to me like if he hadn't told them he was pulling the silver out, nobody would have known anything about it until it was gone. It seems like the people of the Nye County all of a sudden got interested when he told them.
Yeah, and I was so sure that when they had an accounting of what went in,
that's
and what came out
right.
of that Nye County was a little lighter than it went in.
So is that unusual? I don't
Nye
know.
County? Not a Nye County. Nye County's a weird, what is a friend always tells me, there's something wrong with the water in Nye County. People are different there.
Well, it's the old West for sure.
Yeah.
Nye County is, and they've had their share of characters in law enforcement and otherwise all along.
They have. Well, Sheriff Liske, who's been mentioned quite a bit in this case.
Yeah, whatever happened to him, he got beat.
Well, no, he didn't get beat.
Oh, he didn't?
No,
I thought
no,
he did.
He won the election, and then they found out that there was voter fraud, a stuffing of the ballots, if you will,
yeah,
and
well,
he was run out of office.
Okay, well,
he won, and then they kicked him out.
But
so
no,
he's still kicking around.
Or anything for
no,
fixing elections.
No, I don't think they. I don't think they prosecuted. But yeah, he just went into the sunset.
You know, that's pretty amazing. People die for the right to vote. We have all this voter fraud all the time, and nobody ever gets prosecuted. Oh, it's a misdemeanor.
No. Oh, in this town. Oh my gosh, there's, you know, I don't trust those little D-bulbs. machines anyway.
Well, none of
but
us
just
do.
Goes into Never Never Land, and I don't know who I'm voting for.
Yeah, right. No, none of us do.
I don't trust it. I think that it throw those things away and start all over, and I think we ought to uniform it around the nation.
I agree. That's a little viewpoint from Kathy. Anyway, we are broadcasting from Sunset Station with Kathy Scott. Talk a little bit about some of your other books. You were working on a book, and you had to drop it because of all of this thing. You had a pretty interesting fellow with Herbie...
Herbie Blitzstein. Yeah,
the underwear character, world character.
He was kind of a sidekick to Tony Spilotro.
Right.
And
the
I've
enforcer
got,
himself.
Yeah, and I've got some inside track on a bunch of stuff, and... I hate to jinx anything and talk too much about it.
With the mafia.
What mafia? There's no mafia in Las Vegas. So then I wrote The Killing of Tupac Shakur, and I wrote The Murder of Biggie Smalls. And then also Murder of a Mafia Daughter about Susan Berman's, her dad was a mobster too. So I write about the mob, and I write about hip-hop. So I don't know how far apart those worlds are, so...
Well, in many ways they're far apart, in other ways they're not at all.
Yeah, true.
That question of style, maybe.
Right.
Yeah.
So we should be watching. The word has been that because Thanksgiving is so close and they don't want the jury sequestered because the jury may be sequestered during the deliberations, that they may recess and then start back up after Thanksgiving. So I don't know if the closing argument. Well, I don't know. I don't think that's advantageous to either of them. And I think
I
that they
either.
Could be contaminated by the media during that time.
Oh, I do too.
I think they ought to recess for Thanksgiving, and I think that's all they ought to recess for. But that's just me. You know, I think
I agree with you. That's really the plan, huh?
Well, that's what they talked about a while ago, so I don't know if that's what they're going to do now.
Of course, this is going a little faster than they thought it would, too.
Yes. I think they were thinking the beginning of December, and then it would have been easy to break on Thursday and Friday for Thanksgiving and let everybody out a little early on Wednesday, but they didn't do that. So I don't...
There have been a lot of holidays during this time.
Yes. Yeah, we just went through
Nevada Day, then Veterans Day.
Right, it's been...
Joe Bonaventure Day when his son was...
Two Joe Bonaventure Days.
We
had a voting day.
You had a voting
day. He let everybody out on the voting day.
And they had to vote for Joe Bonaventure. And I guess he won handily. No surprise there.
Yeah, name recognition.
Right.
Yeah, so it's going to be interesting to see what they're actually going to do, if they are going to... I mean, my thing is, why don't they just break when the defense rests, they should break. I noticed that the jurors have been, there's one juror who doesn't take his eyes off Sandy. He always watches for, he's in the back row, he always watches for a reaction from Sandy. And if there's something humorous that goes on, they'll laugh at Sandy, they'll laugh at Rick, they'll laugh together. And I think they've humanized themselves to the jury.
Which is an advantage, I would
say. That didn't happen last time. Last time you had the prosecutors just glaring at Sandy and Rick, and then Rick was in prison and his skin was pasty white, and it's a whole different feel, and these prosecutors appear human. You know, they're not glaring, they're not being mean, so it's a whole different.
Yeah,
one's a little bit of a bully, but they're human. Whereas last time, it didn't
Rogers,
feel like that.
It was really glaring at people. It looked like he was taking everything personal.
Yeah, it was a personal thing to him. He wanted that so bad he could feel it, and they leaked. I mean, there was a sieve coming out of the prosecutor's office last time. I mean, there was a leak so big that, you know, they needed a dam to stop it. But this time they've kept kind of a lid on things. It's not as bad as it was. I mean, they were trying it. It was clearly the first time tried in the media. And this time the media is not necessarily siding with Sandy and Rick, but it's not nearly as bad.
Yeah, it's still kind of a little bit pro-prosecution, but not much. Not like it was.
Yeah,
last time it was a hanging.
Well, one reporter for a newspaper, it appears to me as if he's clearly, you know, pro-prosecution. And I don't know if it's he doesn't want to step on their toes or he's got to work there, but it clearly, I mean, almost looks like he's working for them. But it's,
You've been in the newspaper business. That's one of the real problems. If you, you know, the police reporter or whatever, you want to get the real story, but at the same time, you don't want to be shut out. And so you end up giving people benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, one hand works the other, but you can write balanced and keep everybody happy.
Yeah,
you don't have to be one side or the other.
I didn't insinuate you were, but I'm that certainly comes into play.
Well, I write a column, so I have a little latitude, but I also get a little more analytical than you can get in a newspaper story. But if you read what the prosecution said in a day, you know, in a day of trial, then you want to read what the defense said too. And you don't always get to do this.
No,
in
you
this
don't.
One paper that this one person writes for. But, you know, it's almost over.
Now, as far as the judge himself, Judge Bonaventure, just when you think he's not changed at all, he comes up with a ruling like lecturing the Binion family.
That was interesting. Well, I think he had to. And if it's if any of the jurors heard it, I mean, how can you allow that to go on?
Probably the retrial being ordered by the Supreme Court got his attention.
Right. He probably doesn't want another overturning.
I mean, how's he going to live with it twice?
Yeah. That's not a good, there have been some questions about his bias, too, whether there is any, you know, I think he's thinking about that.
Yeah, I think he's still a little pro-prosecution, but most judges are, contrary to popular opinion.
Yeah, that's true.
In my opinion. And we appreciate you for your opinion today, and we'll be talking to you again before the trial is up.
Great.
And we... Then actually, we may not, see, I was thinking we might even get a verdict by the end of this week, but probably not. Huh?
Well, it depends on what they do. It depends on how they want to go. If they want to do their closing and get it moving along, maybe they'll be out by Thanksgiving. I don't know. I mean, I think that, you know, it's kind of a crapshoot. An awful lot of time would go by, and I don't know if you can break, you know, take a vacation for a week.
Yeah,
from a trial. I mean, it doesn't matter if Christmas happens, does it?
Well, I mean, didn't think it did.
If there's a death in the family, I don't think the people, they don't recess, do they?
I don't think
I mean,
they.
I think that it is what it is, and it's going to be very unusual if they do that. So we'll see how that plays out. This is, Thanksgiving is a week from Thursday?
Yes.
So they've got a week and a half. So we'll see what happens.
You know, they need to go ahead and let the trial flow to this natural ending, in my opinion. And then if it's Thanksgiving, they take off and start delivering after
that. Right, that's true. They ought to do that instead of planning way in advance. That's
yeah.
a little too soon. And that's too much time to go by, I think. And they could, who knows who could approach the jurors, their friends, their family. I think it's risky business to do that.
You know,
I think you're right. Take a natural flow.
You know, the one final thing before I let you go is Michael Salas. We are all worried about him, and he has an unusual style. Sometimes he's almost a cut-up. Have you noticed? He kind of jokes around with the judge a little
bit. Oh, Chris Salas?
Yeah.
Yeah, he jokes. Well, you know, he used to work for him.
Yes.
He was his court clerk, but, he jokes around a little bit with him.
He said, okay, I withdraw. I object to it, too. You know,
yeah,
in conversation.
I object to myself, too.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, and there's been a little bit of levity in the trial, and which has been nice.
I wonder how that plays with the jury, if that's a...
Oh, they laugh.
Okay.
They smile. Now, I noticed that once Daskus made a joke, and he was standing right in front of the jurors, and he made a joke to the judge, and Daskus was laughing, and they were just deadpan. They didn't smile, they didn't laugh, but they really pick up on Sandy and Rick or their attorneys. Sarah's quite, you're going to get a kick out of him. He's quite colorful, but
yes,
he really knows what he's doing.
Oh, of course.
He's the best, watching the best in action, and that's fun. You guys will get a kick out of watching
that. And his assistants there, they're all very with it as well.
Yeah, his co-counsel.
Right.
Yes, women who are quite professional.
I like Anna Ling very well.
Right.
She really zeroes in on people.
Yeah, she's good, and if you watch her, she's always she's constantly watching the jurors. You know, she's watching each and every one of the jurors. It's interesting. One of them fell asleep the other day, I think. So.
The juror?
Yeah, one of them.
And who was talking? You remember?
Who was it? I think it was an expert witness. So.
You know, when you have battles of experts like that, sometimes people's eyes glaze over, unfortunately.
Yes.
And anyway, I hope we haven't caused our audience to glaze over. We went a little longer than usual, but that's because I enjoy meeting you personally.
Well, thank you.
It's fun being here in Las Vegas with Kathy Scott. I'm Jerry Pippin, and the book is Death in the Desert, the Ted Binion Homicide.
And they can go to my website at kathyscott.com, Kathy with a C.
And you will sign an autographed copy of that, I think.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thanks very much, Kathy.
Thank you. My pleasure. Joy.